John chapter 18, beginning at verse 33. The context for this is this event takes place shortly before Jesus' crucifixion. He's been arrested, he's been questioned by the high priest, and the Jewish leaders have now brought him in front of the Roman governor, Pilate, in the hope that he will condemn him to death. So this is John chapter 18, beginning at verse 33. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked, "or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now, my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" retorted Pilate. With this, he went out again to the Jews gathered there and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him." Great. Welcome Paul up now to speak to us.
Thank you. Good morning. So this morning I'm talking about truth as we continue in our series looking at foundations. Foundations on which Christians can build their lives so that they can embrace and enjoy life to the full. That's eternal life. That's life to the full as Jesus outlined in John 10:10, that he said, "I came to give you life." Life to have it to the full, here and now, even before we die. In this troubled and broken world, he says we can know peace, purpose, security, joy, and love. And today we're focusing on one aspect of our foundation, that we need to have a good foundation to live that kind of life, and that is truth. And thank you, Rosie, for our reading this morning. That's an encounter with truth. Pilate is there. He has Jesus before him. The Jews, according to their law, the Jewish leaders have come and said, "Our truth is that Jesus is guilty of death because of the claims he's made about being the Messiah, about being the King of the Jews." Now, Pilate, his job is to say, "Okay, I have authority over the Jews. They're my responsibility because the Roman Empire had conquered the Jewish nation." His job is to keep the peace and keep the Jewish people happy so there's no uprising, but also to be just. So he takes their claims of truth about Jesus and says, "I need to compare these to Roman law. Is there truth? Is Jesus deserving of death?" And he looks through the Roman laws and he concludes, "I can find nothing in our law that says he's guilty of anything." So he has a problem. He wants to keep the Jewish leaders happy. He's fearful that the people might cause trouble. But equally, he wants to follow Jewish law, to be just. There's two versions of truth there. So what does he do? He says, "I know, I'll talk with Jesus. Maybe in talking to Jesus, I'll get to the truth of the situation. Maybe I'll find there is something he is guilty of and I can please the Jews." Perhaps that's his hope. So he talks to Jesus. And Jesus says in John 18, verse 37, these words, "The reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth." The truth. I want us to hold that word "the" in our mind because we're going to come back to that later. To testify to the truth. "Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." Now, I'm going to suggest to you at this point, he's saying to Pilate, there are truths and there are truths. There's a truth about me that the Jews have bought. There's a truth about me that you are trying to discern from Roman law. But I tell you, there is the truth. The true truth, we might say. Just as we were talking about true north, there's a true truth. And if you listen to me, you will hear the truth. At which point, Pilate, who's just trying to keep the Jews happy and trying to have an easy day, is thinking, oh my goodness, I don't know what truth is. And he asks this question, but more as a statement out of frustration, I think. What is truth? It is a question I think we should all be asking ourselves this morning. Indeed, I think that's a question that society is asking at the moment. What is truth? I don't want to get all political this morning, but I want to give us an example. COVID vaccinations. Probably one of the most contentious issues at the moment in our society, and has been for a while. Is it a conspiracy? You know, can we trust these experts who are saying we need to have this vaccination, it's going to protect us? Or is Bill Gates involved somehow in putting microchips in there to monitor us? Or, you know, who do we listen to? Social media? To the government? To the scientific and health people? What is truth? And I don't know if you're like me, but sometimes you see so many competing versions of truth, so many A-truths. And all we want is the truth. And yet it's left to us to make decisions. And some decide one thing is their truth, and someone else decides something else is their truth. Truth is in crisis today. Amidst the cacophony of competing perspectives on truth, where do we find our truth? Amidst the competing reasons that people want us to believe something because it might be for their advantage, how do we know when we're being lied to? Does truth actually exist? Or is truth just what we want it to be? These are the very real questions being asked in society today. This is why we need to say, what is truth this morning? But before we start trying to address some of those questions, I want us to ask another question. Why is truth important? If truth isn't important, there's no point in even going through this debate. And actually, in this section, why is truth important, we're going to draw together a few of the things that we've looked at in previous weeks. Firstly, I want us to stretch our mind back to when we said we have a real spiritual enemy. What did we say was the tool of the devil? Where is his power? Can we remember? It's in deceit. It's in lies. The opposite of truth. So firstly, truth is important because our enemy, who we talked about in previous weeks, is a very real enemy. His tool is lies. That's how he manipulates us. John 8:44, you may remember we read these words from Jesus. When he's talking about Satan, he says, there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. And why does he lie to us? Well, we talked about the fact he wants to keep us from eternal relationship with God. He wants to stop us becoming Christian. He wants to stop us having eternal life. He wants to stop us from living this life to the full that Jesus said is available to us. A life of security, significance, and purpose, and joy, and love. And he wants to keep us from being an effective witness. Effective witness to what? The truth of the gospel. So how does he stop us being a witness to the truth, knowing the truth? He lies to us. He puts us through experiences in our life, things done to us by other people. He puts us in a culture that is anti-truth and so full of lies and deceit that we don't know what truth is sometimes. Puts temptations in our way. All these sort of things that he uses to plant lies into our minds. Because this is where the real battle takes place between truth and lies. 2 Corinthians 4:4 says that the enemy, Satan, has blinded the minds of unbelievers so that they cannot see the light of the gospel. And I'm going to suggest to you this morning that the gospel is the truth. So he's trying to blind the minds of unbelievers to the truth of the gospel that will set them free, give them life to the full. That is his goal, the gospel that displays the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. And these words here say the minds of unbelievers. Even as Christians, we have thoughts in our minds. We can think about true things, and we can think about lies. The devil wants us to believe lies about who God is. He might say to us, through the experiences of life that we've had, through what other people have said, through our emotions, he might make us believe the lie that there is no God, or that God can't be loving. He might put lies in us about who we are. I don't need God. I am God of my own life. I'm unforgivable. I'm unlovable. I'm unsavable. My situation, this life is hopeless. He might put lies in us that we are what we have, or we are what we do, or has been done to us. He might put lies into us about other people. Other people are better than me. My value is dependent on what other people think of me. Contrast that with Satan. Contrast Satan's use of lies to manipulate us, to keep us in bondage, keep us in prison, to what Jesus says about the truth. He said, I came that you would know the truth. And in John 8:32, the truth will set you free. Let's say that together. The truth will set you free. That is why truth is important. It undermines everything that the devil is trying to achieve to keep us from the truth that sets us free. Absolutely. So the truth is important. I hope we can all agree on that. But let's get back to our minds, because we have a challenge. In our minds, we've got this cacophony of versions of truth being fired at us. How do we recognize the truth when it comes to us? How do we know when something is true truth, God's absolute truth, timeless truth for all of us, or another version of the truth, a truth, an incomplete truth, or a downright lie? How do we recognize the two? It's not easy. It's not easy. Romans 12:2 talks about that verse that I've just said. Don't conform to the pattern of this world. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. It takes place in our minds. We need to recognize that some of the things that we think, some of the experiences we've had, may have put ideas in our minds that are not true. And as we talked about in guidance last week, the way to know whether it's God guiding us or another voice guiding us is to spend time with God, is to listen to him. And this is why when we look at the armor of God, the first thing that Paul says to us is that we need to put on the belt of truth. He recognizes this is where the devil's going to attack us, with lies. So we need to make sure we are rooted in truth. Our central piece of armor, this belt that holds it all together, that needs to be firmly in place. And then, he says, we need to listen to the truth. And this was in our passage that Rosie read for us. The reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. We need to recognize truth. You might remember I used the illustration last week of the bank teller, the person working in the bank. How do we discern if it's God speaking to us or another voice trying to give us guidance? It's the same here. We've got a bank teller who needs to recognize when a forged note, something deceitful, something that isn't really of value comes in. And the way they do that is not spending time with forged notes, it's spending time with real money, because they get so used to handling it. The smell of it, the feel of it, the look of it, that they get used to knowing what real money is like, what real currency is like. And very easily, maybe even without looking, as they're counting through notes, they will feel if something is off. They will sense something, and they will be able to recognize if something is counterfeit. And so it is, if we spend time listening to the source of truth, then it makes it easier for us to identify the lies that are in our lives, that we are believing. The lies that are coming in, that the devil is trying to plant in us. So we need to spend time listening to the source of truth to recognize it. John 8:31 to 2, we also need to let truth have an impact on our lives. Jesus says, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. What does it mean to hold to teaching? It's one thing to know what the truth is, but if we don't let it have an impact on our life, surely truth is meaningless. It's just knowledge. We say we believe it, but it's not going to impact us. We need to apply truth in our lives. We need to hold to it. We need to let it impact our lives. Otherwise, it can have no value. It can't set us free. It can't help us. So we've looked at why truth is important. We've looked at how we can recognize the truth. And now as we come to our final part of this message, I want us to focus on something a bit different. I believe what we've talked about so far, we've kind of alluded to in a number of our teachings up to now, and we're bringing it together, and we're seeing how the pieces fit together, hopefully. But I want us to take a look at our culture, our context, where we are in history, and how the world views truth at the moment. I'm looking around here, and I would suggest that most of us are from a generation born before, say, the year 2000. We have a very certain view of how the world works, probably. This is a generalization. I'm going to suggest to you that amongst the people who mainly aren't here, maybe some of them are upstairs at the moment, those born since 2000, we might call them millennials, they have a very different worldview. We may be aware of some of those things. But I want to talk a little bit about that, because one of the questions that we've been wrestling with as a leadership here, and I think other people have been asking in the fellowship, and I believe it's being asked in churches, certainly all over the Western world, certainly in the UK, is where are the young people in church? Why are they here for a while, but then sort of hit the teenage years and they go, and do they come back? Why aren't there many 20s here? Maybe 30s, why? I'm going to suggest that one of the reasons is the way the world and their culture and their generation views truth. And if we're going to have a future as a church here in Northwood Hills, I think we need to recognize this, because it will affect the way we need to do church. It will affect the way we communicate truth so it can be heard to people. So I want to spend a little time just looking at worldviews. So a worldview is how people see the world. It's how people find truth. Up until the mid-18th century, sociologists would say that we were in a pre-modern era. By that, it means we find our truth in what religion and religious beliefs say, or philosophers say. That's where we find out truth about the world, about life. We would look to our religious beliefs, perhaps Christian teaching and the Bible, primarily for truth. Or we would look to these philosophers to tell us how the world works and what is true in the world. From the mid-18th century onwards, this idea of modernism, so no longer pre-modernism, modernism came in. And modernism was defined by scientific inquiry. The era of enlightenment, scientists started saying, oh, we can experiment, we can observe, and we can find out things about the world. We can find out truth. We can explore truth and understand how it all works. And at this point, we see a slight split away from pre-modernism, which says truth is found in faith and philosophy. And they're saying now we can discover truth through scientific inquiry. And actually, for some time, the two complemented each other, with people saying, well, you know, religion and philosophy tell us the whys, why we're here. Whereas science tells us the how. You know, if we believe there's a God, he can tell us why we're here, and science exploring that can tell us how God went about it. And the awe of people grew as we found out more about his creation. But at some point, scientists turned this scientific method of observation and experiment towards God and said, well, let's see if there is a God. And of course, you can't prove God's existence by experimentation. You need faith, faith alone. That's what the Bible teaches us. And so that led to a lot of people saying, well, science and religion, they're not compatible. Science has disproved God. And today, we probably, for our generation, certainly, this is the primary view. You know, some people will be, yes, we find all truth in God and other philosophies. Some people will be, it's all in science, in scientific endeavor, and some will be somewhere in between, who says, well, yes, God is the creator and initiator, but we can learn a bit more about how he did it and how awesome he is through scientific research. The thing both those things have in common is that they give us insight into the truth. So you can see the truth. That's the cylinder in the middle. And depending on what way the light shines on it, what perspective you're taking, you might see a different version of that truth. From one angle, the cylinder looks like a rectangle or a square. From another angle, it looks like a circle. Both are representations of truth from a certain perspective. But neither of those is the truth. Both those positions accept there is true truth. And whether you lean towards science and you say, we just don't know what it is yet, we've got an impression, we've got a shadow, but if we keep inquiring, eventually we know the truth is out there. And whether you look at it from a Christian perspective, which might say, well, we don't know all of the truth. To quote Scripture, 1 Corinthians 13:12, I've taken this from the King James Version because I like the way it phrases it. It says, for now we see through a glass darkly. I don't know if you've ever been in a shower and it's steamed up and you can't see the taps in the bath anymore. But we can get an impression of what's out there. As Christians, we say we know there is truth. Jesus came to testify it, but until we get to the other side of being in heaven, we're not going to know the full truth. But it is there. Why am I talking about this? I'm going to suggest to you that we have moved into a new age. Our new age is postmodernism, which started around the 1970s. Majority of people in the Western world nowadays have a postmodern perspective. If you don't have a postmodern perspective on life, then you are going to be in decline. Modernism is going to disappear over the next couple of generations. What's the difference between postmodernism and what's come before? They say there is no absolute truth. There is only shadows. If I think something is true, and you may have heard these sort of phrases, then that's my truth. What you say may be true for you, but it's not true for me. There's no conception there is absolute truth. And as a result, as a Christian who is trying to share and believes that there is absolute truth and we need to share that gospel as part of our Great Commission, we have a big problem. Because if you talk to somebody who's perhaps a millennial child, someone born since the millennium, and this is their worldview, they will say, that may be true for you, but it's not true for me. And they may actually be quite angry. Why? Because your claim to know absolute truth is intolerant. You are judging them. You are arrogant. I'm putting it in strong terms. It may not quite be like that. But you can understand the problem. We are saying we are here to testify to the truth. That's what Jesus wants to do and wants us to do. And the truth will set people free. But so many people are wrapped up in postmodernism that they cannot see the truth. And we have obstacles and we have barriers. And if we still want to be a church here in 20 years' time, we need to work out how do we cross this barrier? How do we make somebody who says, this is my truth, believe and choose to believe that the absolute truth that is in the Bible that we are professing should be their truth? How do we do that? It's a big challenge. If we are sat here today saying it's illogical, how can it be true for you and your truth is just as valid as that truth and there's no absolute truth? How can contradictory truths both have equal validity? I think we're asking the wrong question. We're fighting against something. We're fighting against a tsunami that's going to take us over. Because already in our education systems and our cultures and young people, this is the worldview they have. And arguing against it won't get you anywhere. We need to say, this is the reality we are facing, whether it makes sense to me or not. How do we bridge this gap of culture, of understanding, of perception of truth, so that they can hear the true gospel, so they can make that their own truth, and that they can have freedom? So very quickly, as we close, I have three tips, and they're Bible-based, and how we can adapt our evangelism, how we might need to change the church over these next generations to still have a church in the future. Firstly, authentic testimony. One of the traits of postmodernists seems to be that they are very skeptical of experts. Very skeptical of people who claim to have the truth. We might see this with the younger generation who are rather listen to peers about COVID vaccination, as an example, rather than what the top scientific experts. And we might say, how can they do that? It's because there's a skepticism. I won't look into expand on why that has come about, but that seems to be the reality. Now, this gives us an opportunity as Christians. Normally, we might say, how can we cleverly project the gospel to these people? What evangelistic model can we use? How can we communicate the gospel in a clever way that's relevant to them through clever illustrations? I'm going to suggest that's not where we start. That may be how we used to do it. But that won't reach this generation. They are looking for something authentic. They don't want to know what an expert thinks or what the Bible thinks, because that's a truth or a possible truth. They want to know that it's something that works. What is true is what they can see working. Your testimony, I'm going to suggest, is more powerful than your bringing a gospel passage to them to start with, to engage with them. Your testimony of God's work in your life and testifying to how it has worked, how it has benefited to you, because then they can say, oh, perhaps this truth that they're bringing to me has some value. Perhaps it works. But of course, testimony is words. But we also need to bring life testimony, because they're looking for authenticity. Does it really work? So you profess as a church that you care about the environment. What are you doing as a church about the environment? If we just talk, then Greta will be going, blah, blah, blah. That's the postmodern response. They want to see action. And good for them to try and challenge us to not be hypocrites and to say, this isn't just words. We're going to follow through on this. If we profess to be peace-loving and caring and all about unity, but they see the church and see infighting and conflict between denominations and things, they're going to write this off as a truth. It doesn't work. It can't be truth. It's not a truth that I want to take into my life. So we need to be authentic. And I won't read through this whole verse because time is against us. But James 2, 15 to 17 talks about how we should be doing good. We shouldn't just be saying, go in peace, keep warm and well-fed, but not do anything about their physical needs. We need authenticity. Let's not come at them hard with the gospel. Let's come at them hard with our authentic, spoken, and witnessed testimony, that they can look at us and say it works. There is a place for sharing the gospel, but I'm going to suggest we don't come in with our clever, reasoned arguments first. That's not going to communicate well to them, the truth. There might be a point then when they've seen that it works in our lives that they will ask us the questions. And that's where 1 Peter 3:15 comes in. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give a reason for the hope you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. So we testify. And I know Philip Watson is always telling me we need more testimony from the stage. And that was ringing in my ears as I was working through this morning. Yes, we need to testify more, because especially these generations, these younger generations, that's what they want to hear. They'll then match it up with authenticity, and then they might come and ask. One of the reasons we find it so hard to share truth today, one of the reasons we're so anxious and that stops us from sharing the gospel with people, is because culturally we are sharing an absolute truth. And society says you cannot share absolute truth anymore. It's intolerant to say you have truth. Ironically, they're intolerant of absolute truth in the sake of tolerance. But that's the reality we're in. But if we have shown them through our testimony that it works, they might then come and ask us to find out a bit more. And that's when we have the opportunity to share the gospel. And what's the next step for us? The final step, I would suggest, is not to then invite them into lifelong church or a heavy commitment. Because they might have got to the point now saying, this is your truth, and I can see it kind of works for you. They're not just going to go and sign up to it now. They want to see that it works for them. And people are hesitant to commit too much to resource to something, aren't they? If they're not sure it's going to work. So we suggest they try before they buy. That's how I've put it. I'm sure you've heard that expression before. And that's where we come to Psalm 34, verses 4 to 10. Here it is. I sought the Lord and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. This poor man called out and the Lord heard him. He saved him from out of his troubles. The angel of the Lord delivers them. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Those who fear him lack nothing. Invite them to taste, to test the truth for themselves. That may involve an invitation to church, but in a low-pressured way. Come, just check it out one Sunday. Try reading the Bible for a week. Try praying about this for a week. Be prepared to walk with them in that. I'll pray with you. I'll read the Bible with you if that's going to help them. Lots to think about there. I'm sure many of you have children and grandchildren. We have young people in this church, and there are young people out in this community who are lost. They need to hear the truth. We have this barrier, this obstacle, this crest of a wave of a change from modernism, our way of seeing the world, to their way of seeing the world in truth. How serious are we about reaching these people with the truth that will set them free? Okay, thank you.